Welcome to Your Career Podcast, the podcast that helps to ensure your career success. To start getting on track with your career, download my free career goals calendar from thecareersacademy.online. My goals calendar includes a SMART goals template and a weekly tasks sheet that will ensure step by step you get closer to reaching your career goals. So download my goals calendar today at thecareersacademy.online. Now on with the show.
Hey, this is John Lee Dumas introducing Jane Jackson Careers, a podcast that will inspire you to take control of your career and your life. Here's your host, Jane Jackson, career management coach and author of Navigating Career Crossroads. Be prepared to ignite.
Welcome back to my careers podcast, where I interview fascinating professionals who have made successful career changes or have gone into entrepreneurship. Now, today I am thrilled to welcome Ryan Roten to the show. Ryan is based in Indiana in the US and is a speaker, podcaster, personal branding strategist, and career development enthusiast. As the host of a brand new You podcast on iTunes, he provides excellent insights into career management and career branding techniques. Ryan successfully combines his corporate career as a business manager in Carmel, Indiana, for a global security hardware and technology company with his passion for career management and branding, and using a four-step process he calls DICE, D-I-C-E. Ryan helps business professionals become known in their field by helping them grow their influence and amplify their online reputation. Whether looking to move up in a company, start a side hustle, or branch out to become a solopreneur, the DICE process provides clarity of purpose and a roadmap to empower individuals to impact their career. So let's find all about it and welcome Ryan to the show. Hello, Ryan.
Hello, Jane. How are you?
I'm very well. And I've been looking forward to this conversation because I want to find out not only about your DICE process, because it's all about careers and I'm all about careers, but I want to find out your career path, because you've actually had a really fascinating career path and you're combining it with entrepreneurship. So how about, to kick us off, let's find out a little bit about your early days and what sort of a career did you dream about in your teens?
Wow, good question. So it's easy. It's an easy answer for me. My career that I dreamed about when I was a teenager and even through most of college was I wanted to be a pilot. And so I went to school to learn to be a pilot. And I am actually now, even still today, a licensed instrument and commercial pilot, as well as a registered FAA mechanic.
You do that now. Is that, but that wasn't your career. It's now a hobby?
We could call it a hobby, sure. I think for it to be called a hobby, you actually have to engage in it every once in a while. And I haven't flown a plane in probably, oh man, almost 20 years now.
Really? Oh, what a shame, because it's such an exciting thing. Actually, mentioning flying, I did 10 flying lessons way back in the early 1980s, but then I kind of got a bit nervous when I had to go under the hood, so I didn't pursue it. So you've got your license, so I'm really, really impressed. And so you were doing your flying, and you enjoyed it, and then what happened?
Interesting question. My whole career, actually, when I sit back now and I look at it, it's been just a series of decisions that have led me along a path. And whether I was doing it consciously or unconsciously, I almost always gravitated towards my strengths. And one of the things during my flight school, or actually during the maintenance portion of my college career, so I was actually kind of a dual major. I was a pilot major and a mechanic major. And in the maintenance portion of college, I got the opportunity to work with composite materials, which is basically Kevlar, graphite, fiberglass, those types of materials. And I really enjoyed it. And at the same time that was going on, I became a TA for a professor, and so I was running and teaching some of his classes. I was really getting into composite materials. And at the same time that was happening, I had some friends who were in the flight school and in really just the maintenance program in general, and they left school, got jobs while I was still in school finishing up my degree. And during the same time, but during the time it took me to graduate, they had, some of them had lost their jobs. Because back when I was in school, the airline industry here in the States was going through a lot of consolidation. And so there were a lot of layoffs and things. And so I watched my friends who left with maintenance degrees and left with pilot certifications go get a job and then get laid off and have no job. So when it came time for me to graduate, I had to decide, okay, do I want to pursue this career that I've gone to school for, or do I want to take a slightly different path? And it just happened that as I was being a teaching assistant for my professor, he introduced me to the gentleman who runs the character crafts worker shop at Walt Disney World in Orlando, Florida. And so I interacted with that gentleman my senior year in college and decided when I graduated that I wanted to go into manufacturing more than I wanted to be a pilot and more than I wanted to be a mechanic. So I took a job just as an hourly worker at Walt Disney World making Mickey Mouse and Goofy heads. And that was the first decision that would ultimately lead to other places.
What a great start, and what fun too.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was I enjoyed it a lot. The problem with it was for me, you know, I had a college degree, and so I had some kind of expectations on myself that I wanted to, you know, kind of get through the corporate ladder. Well, in that particular environment, there really wasn't a corporate ladder. It was, I was an hourly worker. I was doing, you know, manual labor with my hands, building goofy heads, and there was no real career path for me there.
Oh, but it would have been quite a lot of fun. You know what was interesting that you were saying? All of your friends who graduated and had similar degrees as you and then got jobs while you were still studying, but then the economy turned and the airline industry was badly hit, and then there were layoffs and redundancies, and you could actually see, and it probably made you feel quite concerned, thinking, oh my goodness, I'm spending all this time getting qualified for a role that may or may not be there or may not last, even if I got one. And so that must have caused a little bit of anxiety for you. How did you feel when you saw your friends actually losing their jobs when they'd secured roles that they must have been thrilled about?
Yeah, I mean, the same way that I do now when I see it happen to, you know, friends, coworkers, or, you know, people that I know in other industries, it just, you know, just tears you up. And, you know, when it happened to them, I thought, well, you know, it could happen to me too. So what am I going to do to prevent that? And at that point in my life, the only decision I really had was, okay, well, I'm not going to go down that path. I'm going to go down this other path, and I'm going to start working in manufacturing.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's good that you can see that there are other options as well, because even though you've got the qualifications, the economy can dictate your success sometimes. I think it's fantastic that you're able to find something else to do. So from making goofy heads, Ryan, how did you progress in your career?
So, I mean, once I was making the goofy heads, manufacturing kind of was what I knew I was going to go do for the next few years. I enjoy seeing how things come together. I've always loved to go, and I'll talk a little bit more about it here in a second, but I always love to go to suppliers and see how things are made. And so once I was in the manufacturing realm, it was going to be difficult to get me out. And there were some, you know, I realized with Disney that it wasn't going to be a long-term thing and that I needed to do something else. And I ended up moving to a completely different state in Arizona, and took another job in manufacturing, but also still working with composites. This time I was making armored seating systems, bulletproof glass, and things of that nature for the military with a company that had a government contract. And so I took my skill set, if you will, from Disney making graphite and Kevlar goofy heads. And I took that skill set and I went to Phoenix, Arizona, using graphite and Kevlar, and started to make bulletproof vests and bulletproof and armored seats and seating systems for the military. And so I continued to build upon the skill set that I had gained when I worked for Disney. And then the next step was through purely networking. It was kind of an accident. I didn't really know it was called networking back then. I hadn't really thought much about it at that point in my career. But I had a coworker who left the company, and she moved to Jacksonville, Florida, which is completely on the other side of the United States, back where Walt Disney World was, very close to it. And about a year after she left, she sent me an email and said, "Hey, I have a perfect job for you here. Send me your resume. We need to get you here." And so I sent her. This is how quickly this all came about, and this is why I am now a big believer in building networks, because you never know when somebody you meet can help you out in a completely unexpected way. And so on a Wednesday, I sent an email. On a Thursday, I talked to who would eventually become my boss. And then Friday morning, they sent me plane tickets to get on a plane Friday night. I got on a plane Friday night. I interviewed Saturday, all Saturday morning, stayed there Saturday night. And by the time I flew back to Phoenix on Sunday afternoon, there was already an answer on my message on the answering machine, or a message on the answering machine saying, "Hey, we want to make you a job offer. Call me on Monday."
Wow.
And it just happened that fast. Literally within 2 weeks of that initial email, my wife and I were packing up and we were on our way back to Florida.
How exciting. I mean, big moves. And I mean, that whole journey, it was like, it must have been quite nerve-wracking thinking what's going to happen. But the nice thing is that it happened all within 2 weeks and was very quick. And I love it that you're talking about it was networking before you even knew what networking was.
Right.
Yeah, because I mean, and it, honestly, I'd say about 75 to 80% of the clients that I work with secure their next roles through the network more than through any of the other job search methods. And one thing I like to say is networking actually is just developing relationships before mm-hmm. you actually need them. And it worked for you and you didn't even realize it was going to happen. So obviously you've got great interview technique. You've got the goods with your manufacturing background. And of course, you know, I mean, getting the foot in the door is great, isn't it? But you've got to have the goods to back it up as well. And you know, you had a little foot in the door and then you proved yourself. That would have been so exciting. So how did you feel about moving interstate?
At the time it didn't bother me. My wife and I were, you know, newly married. We had no children, and we were still both chasing our careers. And so it didn't bother me. It just happened. She was working in a company that had a division in Florida. So she was able to easily transfer. And so it just worked out. I mean, everything kind of added up to say, okay, this is what you need to go do.
And when you made that move, I'm just thinking now, my line of questioning is to find out how you made the transitions, because you know, getting a new job is all well and good, but actually moving country or moving city or moving state can be quite a big deal for some people. But for you, it sounds like both you and your wife embraced the new environment and you know, getting to know new networks, new friends. How did you find that sort of change and settling in period?
I enjoyed it. My wife especially enjoys it. She grew up in a military family, so she's used to moving quite often. I didn't have that. I actually stayed in one place and growing up and kind of all through college too. And so one of the things that promises, if you will, that I had made to myself was I was not going to take a job in my home state when I got out of college. I wanted to move around and see different parts of the country. And so I was able to do that for my first two jobs. Unfortunately, the company that I moved to Florida for about a year and a half after I was there, they actually shut down. But that's, you know, that's a risk that you take when you make that kind of move. And it just happened that yet again, during that time frame that I was working for the company, the new company in Florida, I was sent off to multiple training sessions. And I actually met my next employer and boss through one of the training sessions.
And again, more networking.
Yeah, it's funny. I look back, you know, now that you're making me think about this, I honestly can say I have not taken one job since I graduated college where it was not because of my network, because of someone that I knew at one of the places I went to.
Does that mean you have never submitted an online application?
I have. No, I mean, you have to apply online, even though you know somebody internally. But you also know once you do that, that your name's going to get floated to the top. But I have never, I've never received a job because I put in an application through an online posting and, you know, they just said, hey, this is a great resume. We need to call this guy.
Yeah. It's, I can never really emphasize enough to anyone going through any change how effective the network can be. And also, I mean, you've got to be personable. People have got to like you and know you and trust you as well. But obviously, you develop really good relationships and having the skills and the knowledge and a good personality too, Ryan. You know, and a good personality so that you really fit in the culture. It makes such a difference, doesn't it? And so from that role in Florida, tell me a little bit more about what happened next.
Okay, so they announced that they were going to shut down the facility. So I knew that I was going to need to find a new job. I had met a couple of different recruiters along the journey. So I reached out to one of them. And then at the same time, I also reached out to the gentleman that I had met at training. It was really interesting because when I went to the training, the very first night at the very first dinner, this guy stands up at the table. There's probably 15 or 16 of us at the table. And he says out loud, I am hiring. If anybody would like to talk to me about a job in Indiana, please come talk to me. And, you know, at the time I didn't need a job. I had just moved to Florida. I wasn't going to leave my company hanging that had just moved me there. But I, you know, I did have a conversation with him. We talked and got to know each other before I went back to my company in Florida and continued my job. So anyway, when they announced that the plant was shutting down, I reached out to the one recruiter and then I reached out to this guy again. And it just happened that I ended up with two opportunities through that. One was working for a company in Wisconsin. And unfortunately, that job was a, and I say unfortunately because at that point in time, I had a young child at this stage. And that job would have been a really great job, but it would have also been a job that required about 80% travel. So I had this job offer where it was a good job, you know, that corporate career, going to climb the ladder. I could get there quickly, but I'd have to travel 80% of the time. And I'd have to move my wife and my new son to a place where they don't know anybody and then leave them 80% of the time. Or as it turned out, the guy that I had worked with at the training session, he worked for a company called Otis Elevator in just south of Indianapolis in a city called Bloomington. And he was hiring again and he made me a job offer so I could move my family back to Indiana where at least I had family. So if I needed to move or if I needed to travel for work, then my wife would be able to, you know, go, you know, call on my mom or my dad if they needed help, if she needed any kind of help. And so I ended up taking the job in Indiana and that's exactly how I got back to Indiana.
Oh, and it was a values-based decision, it sounds like.
You know, it really was. When I look at your book and I look at the things, you know, in the life inventory, I hadn't written them down specifically, but one of the things that was really important to me at that point in my life was making sure that I was there for my wife and my son. And so I made the decision to not take this because it would have been a great position with a lot of global experience. And that's why it was 80% travel, because I would have been responsible for implementing lean manufacturing at 24 locations throughout the world. And which was just like a massive job. And as soon as I started doing the math and realized I'm going to be gone like all the time, I just knew in my heart it wasn't the right job. It wasn't the right job for me.
Yeah. If it had come at a different point in your life when, say, it was before you had a child, then it might have been a harder decision to make because you think, oh, you know, okay, darling, I'm going to be traveling a lot. It's going to be really great for our future and wonderful career path for me. And then you probably would have thought a little bit longer and harder about it. But knowing that priority is family, and family happiness really is number one, isn't it, up there with health, it made your decision to move to Indiana so much easier. So, and also, you know, family values, career values, they change over time, don't they?
Oh, yeah, absolutely they do. Absolutely they do. And, you know, like I said, if it had had that happen when I was younger, you're absolutely right. We would have jumped all over that, and she probably would have traveled with me. But at that season, in that season of our life, we were, you know, just it wasn't the right decision to make.
Mm-hmm. And so now you move back to Indiana, and I know you're in Indiana now. How did the career progress from there?
So I worked for Otis Elevator. It's as I think you call them lifts, but I made the elevators. And so I got involved in supply chain management at that point. I moved out of, you know, kind of directly the manufacturing side and went over to the supply chain side. And I started working with our suppliers and working with them to implement lean manufacturing or to help them troubleshoot problems, you know, whatever help or assistance they needed to be able to provide us with the product that we needed. It was my team's job to go do. And I was working for a gentleman that I really, really liked. And I'd been with the company, I think at this point, from, let's say, close to 5 years, maybe just over 5 years. And I was working for a guy I really liked. And I still remember this day. I can close my eyes and picture it. It was one of those moments where you go, ugh. Anyway, he came in, he called a staff meeting, and he announced he was leaving the company and that he was going to go work for another company called Ingersoll Rand, which was on the north side of Indianapolis. So it was about, I mean, driving wise, it's about an hour away from where I was working. So when he was done with his announcement, I remember feeling really, you know, kind of bummed out because I really did like working for this gentleman. And I just went to him and I said, hey, if you ever need any help or assistance while you're up there, you know, give me a call and let me know. And, you know, he said, okay, what do you think you'd like to do? And we had a quick chat about it. And then he took his 2 weeks notice and left, and I didn't see him. 30 days later, he called me and he said, here's a phone number of the guy that you need to call here. I've already talked to him about you. Just give him a call today. So I called the guy. He was waiting for my phone call because they had spoken beforehand. And long story short, 2 weeks later, I started working at Ingersoll Rand.
Fantastic. It's amazing how all the pieces of the puzzle just fall together.
Yeah. And I think what you said earlier too, is it wasn't just the connections. I mean, connections are great to get the inside to the company, to get directly to hiring managers, but you also have to have the skill set to go with it. And for the positions that I was applying for, I mean, I was just building upon all of the skills that I had been, you know, gaining throughout my career. And so they were all natural, logical progressions for me. But it certainly did not hurt that I had an in, if you will, with a lot of the hiring managers, because I had met them and, you know, in effect, networked with them at a time when I didn't know I needed them, but eventually did.
You know what? Looking through your LinkedIn profile, so there was Ingersoll Rand, and then there were some other moves and other things going on in your career. And you have this also entrepreneurial venture as well. So can you tell me a little bit about that journey?
Sure. When I moved to Ingersoll Rand initially, I was still in supplier quality and development. So I took on a global role. I was responsible for the quality that was coming out of all of our suppliers, as well as the development of all of our suppliers worldwide. And I did that for like the first 3.5 years of my time with Ingersoll Rand. And then I sat down, I had a really great boss at this time, and I sat down with her, and she and I had a really kind of heart-to-heart discussion about where I wanted to go next in my career. Because at that point in time, I had spent almost 10 years working with suppliers and working in the supply chain. And so there were a lot of, you know, okay, I've been there, done that. You know, I had kind of lost my sense of urgency because all the problems were becoming the same to me, and I knew how to resolve a lot of things. And so the excitement and the challenge for the role wasn't there like it was at the first part of the 9 years. And so she told me, she said, well, I'd hate to lose you, but you have, you know, you have a choice to make. You can stay in supply chain and I can try to get you involved in different aspects of the supply chain, or you could take a different path and you could go learn about the business part of business that I hadn't had any exposure to, which is frankly a job move that I would never have been able to make otherwise had I not been within a company, because I couldn't have just applied for this particular role at another company because I would have had zero experience and no one would have hired me. So through her introductions to different people within product management, I was able to eventually get to the vice president of product management at the time. And he and I had a half an hour meeting. We talked. We had a really good time, a really good conversation. And it just happened he was going through some career stuff at the same time. So we both had a connection that was different than just a, you know, you're a superior and I'm looking up to you type thing. And he told me at the end of it, he goes, I don't have any job opens now, but when I do, you're going to be the guy that I'm bringing in. And this was probably 3 months after that conversation, he sent me an email and said, check the job board. I just posted a job. It's yours if you apply. And so and that's how I moved into product management. And so I spent 5 years as a product manager, managing our mechanical portfolio and all aspects of it, right? So I was responsible for ideation, coming up with new products, launching new products. It was really a fun job. And in a lot of ways, I think it was kind of a role that my career had been building up to at that point, because I could use everything that I had learned from the supply chain standpoint, especially, and really apply it in a product management role. So it was really great for me. And then I got to a point in product management where it was, I either had to be promoted or I was basically going to just keep that role for as long as I was with the company. And I had decided that I needed to maybe take a break and learn something different. So I moved into program management. And the reason I moved into program management is because I have this passion, if you will, on the side for all things electronic. I'm kind of an electronics geek. I like apps and software, and I love to see how things come together from that side of the business. And I had an opportunity. I couldn't do it as a product manager, but I could do it as a program manager. And so as a program manager, I could go and I could work with all the electronics product managers, and I could work with all of the software development teams, and I could see how all that stuff came together to create apps and to create the different systems and things that you needed for to be able to wirelessly get into and out of your building. And that really appealed to me. And so I was kind of stagnated with the mechanical piece as a product manager. And so moving into program management was a good way for me to bridge that gap to gain some experience that I wanted, because I wanted to become a program manager for electronics.
What an interesting path, because I just want to wind back a little bit to that conversation you had with your manager when you were going through a little bit of, oh, there's no more challenge in my job, and everything was getting to be a little bit the same. And in a way, it was almost like if you had carried on doing that for many more years, you would have stagnated in your career. But having having that fantastic manager who said, hey, here are some ideas for you. You need to get more training. You need some new experience. Let me, you know, like introduce you to someone who can, you know, who can possibly promote you or move you into a new area. And that was how you got into the product management and more of a leadership role. And then after a while, again, reaching that maybe that level of competence where you think, okay, well, I can do it now. I need something new. You've got this great curiosity and innovative approach, and the fact that you self-proclaimed electronics geek, you've got a really creative side to you as well. And so bright, shiny things, Ryan.
yeah, exactly.
Which is good. But it's like you're always looking for another challenge.
I am. I actually am. I love, and what's interesting is I look at the assessments I've taken, like the StrengthsFinders assessment, or there's another one I've taken called Standout, and even a third that I really like too called Fascination Advantage. All of them tell me that I am a creative person. I love to get involved in projects at the beginning and to see how everything comes together. So I understand it, and I can make decisions better when I know and understand how everything comes together. Well, naturally, that means that I'm going to, as I go into a new role, I'm going to be super excited. I'm going to absorb as much information as I can. I'm going to pull into that new role all of my past experiences and try to make something new or better. But it also implies that at some point, and what I'm finding is it's usually for me about the 4-year mark, I start to get restless and I need to look for a new challenge. I need to find something different to do. And I had always knew that I loved electronics. So when I got to that point as a program manager for mechanical products, I knew that I wanted to do something on the electronics side because it was a growing part of our business too. So we were hiring, we were looking for people to get into that side of the business. But I had had conversations with the hiring managers who all told me, you know, you don't have any electronics experience and I need people who can help me now. And I completely understand that. So it just happened that going into program management was a way, like I said a minute ago, for me to bridge that gap, to let me work with the product managers, to let me work with the software guys and to gain kind of the experience through their eyes and understand that knowledge. So now next time, you know, my plan was next time that position opened up, now I could say, hey, I ran these projects. I know about that product. I know about that product line. I'm a good fit for that role. And that was my plan. And that was what I was going to do up until early last year when the same boss that we were just talking about a minute ago reached back out to me again.
And what happened when he reached back out to you?
Well, she called me up and she said, Ryan, we have this thing called retail returns and we need somebody to manage it. And I think you would be a perfect person to manage that business. And so she talked to the guy who is now my boss and had kind of paved the path, if you will, for the discussion between he and I. And she, you know, because I had worked directly for her for several years. And so through her help and assistance, I was able to move into this new role, which is now I'm the business manager for retail returns for my company.
You get tapped on the shoulder. People are there. You've had quite a charmed career so far. So you've got your career and mm-hmm. it's coming along really well and you're moving on every 4 years or so. You find another challenge, you know, you learn new skills, you progress in your career. This is great. So how does your podcast, A Brand New You, fit in with all of this?
Okay, great question. So now everything seemed nice and rosy up until now. Mm-hmm. So as I was in the mechanical business when I was a product manager, I was one of the reasons that I moved from that role into the program management role was in addition to I wanted the experience on the electronics side, was that there was an opening for a leadership role, so it would have been, you know, equal to my boss in a different category that I had applied for. And everybody was telling me at this time, Ryan, this job is yours. You got it. Even my boss was saying, I don't even know why they're interviewing you. They should just put you in that job. And it turned out that during the time I applied to the time I actually was interviewed, they had made a leadership change. So the position I was trying to apply for, that position's got a new boss. And I interviewed with the new boss after he had only been with the company for 3 months. So he didn't know me. He didn't know what I had accomplished or what I had done, the previous 7 years, 8 years of my career with the company. He just knew me through a half hour discussion that I had with him about the position. And so I got done with that and I felt pretty confident about it. But it turns out that he didn't feel that I was ready for the position. And so I didn't get the job. And it was really, it was that job. If I think all the way back to even when I was, you know, doing the Mickey Mouse goofy heads, it was that job that you work for. You know, it was the director level. It was the vice president level. It's that kind of top of the tier position that you want to get to, that you're working for, you know, that most of us go to school to get there, if you will. And I got turned down for it. And it was, you know, it devastated me would probably be too much of an exaggeration, but it didn't make me feel really good. if you know what I mean. And, you know, so I had, just like anybody else, I had two choices to make at that particular moment. And, you know, there's a book that I love the quote from. It's called A Million Miles in a Thousand Years by Donald Miller. And he refers to these moments that we have in our lives as inciting incidents. And basically what that means is something will happen to you that will cause action. And so we have two choices when that happens. You can either not take the action or you can take the action. And it just happened that as I was going through, you know, this kind of, I'll call it a sulking or a moping time where I was feeling a little bit sorry for myself because I didn't get it. I was trying to figure out, though, what was wrong with me. And I kept asking myself, what's wrong with me? Why didn't I get that job? What's wrong with me? And I happened to have an hour long commute to work. So I listened to a lot of podcasts. And I was listening to a podcast whose name I cannot remember right now, but there was a lady being interviewed and she was talking about personal branding. And as she was talking about, you know, all the aspects of personal branding, the hair, literally the hairs on my hand and on the back of my neck, they all started to stand up, and it just felt to me like she was speaking directly to me. And so the rest of the day, I thought about the questions and the things that she was talking about in the podcast. And I came home that night and I told my wife, I said, I think I need to do this. I think I need to hire this lady as a coach. And so the next day, for the first time in my life, I made an investment in myself and I hired her as a coach. And it turned out to be one of the best decisions that I think I've ever made, because it helped me rediscover me. And so that's how this whole podcast thing started to come about. It didn't happen right away. I went through this period of learning what my personal brand was, what personal brands are, how you can use them. And I just became, so back to my curiosity and my creative side, I became very curious, all things personal branding. I wanted to know everything. So I consumed as much knowledge and information as I could find. I turned my car into Automobile University, and any book on tape I could find on the subject, any podcast I could listen to on the subject, I did. And as I was doing this, I was reaching out through social media networks to other people who were doing the same thing. And so without knowing it, again, I'm building this network of people. And I noticed that folks started to come to me eventually to ask me questions about personal branding and, you know, how can I help them discover their personal brand? And so it just kind of has built up on itself. I was doing a lot of actions and activities, and I didn't really have a framework or anything around it. But I knew that the knowledge I was gaining, I needed to share it. And so I had surrounded myself at that point in time, and how I got to this point is probably a longer story than you have time for on your podcast, but I had surrounded myself with a bunch of people who were doing internet marketing, and all of them had podcasts. And so when you surround yourself with people who are doing something and you're the only one who's not doing something, eventually you're going to end up doing it too. And so they all encouraged me to say, Ryan, you need to share what you're learning with as many people as you can. And so that's what got me thinking, okay, maybe a podcast is the right thing for me to do. And the next investment I made in myself is I went to a podcast movement conference to learn about podcasts, but I had no podcast idea, or I just knew I wanted to do one, but I didn't know what it was going to be about when I went to the conference. But by the time I got done with the conference, I knew what it was going to be about, and I knew when I was, you know, who I was going to interview and when I was going to start it.
I think that journey gives me goosebumps, honestly, because it all stemmed from you being rejected for a role and analyzing what went wrong. And actually, it was probably because your branding wasn't strong enough at that point in time, so that the person who was interviewing you didn't really know enough about you, because you said he didn't really know you and the interview wasn't really that long. And then this decision was made and that was the end of that. But good for you for reinventing yourself. And so now a brand new you. I listen to your podcast. It's just so interesting as well, because when talking about podcasting, it's such a good way to learn just about anything. And especially if you're on the road a lot and listening, it's that perfect opportunity. Now, you mentioned that you went to a podcast movement conference. Was that the one last year with John Lee Dumas and all these other famous podcasters?
Yes, that was the second one. So I went to the very first one, and then I also went last year, and I'll be going back this year in, I guess, like 4 months from now.
Yeah. Oh, how I would love to attend those, because John Lee Dumas, of course, is so interesting to listen to, and he's very, very inspiring. And another gentleman who I've interviewed on my podcast called Colin Gray, he's called the podcast host. I don't know if you've met him or not, but I found him also through listening to his podcasts. And I reached out to them and said, oh, I'd love to interview you as well. And they've all got this, the podcast movement in common. And now you're going to be there as well. And you're a podcaster, and I hope that you get to speak. That would be so good to hear you up on stage at the podcast movement as well. So you're truly, you are following your passion, and you have multiple passions. This, you know, crossroads that you reached when you didn't get that role, and it spurred on this whole new direction. When you talk about it, Ryan, there's so much passion. And so how is a brand new you going?
It's going really well. What I like most about it is you get to touch places. We were talking about before we hit record. The podcast is just, it's a global thing, and you can reach so many people that you never knew you had the opportunity to. And, you know, I've been able to reach out and help people in other countries, which I still find absolutely amazing. And it's just, I love to be able to share what I am learning with others, and I love to be able to help people, because we all have, and this is probably one of the biggest misconceptions that I think people don't realize, is we all have a personal brand, and we can choose to nurture it and grow with it and use it to our advantage, or we can choose, and there are still some people who do this, they choose to ignore it and do nothing about it. And some of the people who choose to ignore it and do nothing about it are because they don't understand that they actually do have a brand. And so if I can, I'll walk your listeners through just a quick exercise to help them understand that they do in fact have a brand, because your brand is really important. I mean, it's just what you said a minute ago. I didn't have good rapport with the gentleman who was hiring. My brand at that point in time was not strong enough for him to feel it, if you will, within the organization. And so he made his decision based on that, you know, and I can't fault him for that. But if you take yourself, you know, close your eyes, but don't do it if you're driving, and you picture yourself in a conference room, and in that conference room with you are coworkers, and you're all working on a project together. Okay, so you're talking about the project. You're kind of, maybe you're happy to be there, maybe you're not super happy to be there, but you're talking and you're discussing the project, and all of a sudden the door opens and in walks a senior leader and they sit down. What happens to the mood of that room? It could either all of a sudden get real quiet and get very serious, or it could continue as it was before. And everybody could say, hey, how you doing? Welcome in. We're talking about this. And, you know, and your conversation just continues. What happens at that moment when that person sits down is 100% dependent upon the brand that they have built within that organization. So that their person's brand impacts what else happens in that meeting and what else happens in that conference room. So if that person is a very serious business-like-minded person, they're going to come in, they're going to sit down, and everybody's going to all of a sudden get super serious, and they're going to start talking, no numbers and statistics percentages. If that person is easier to get along with and maybe, you know, is very familiar with the project, you know, it may be like just another friend sat down or another coworker sat down. And it's all dependent upon that person's brand. So if you take the same scenario and picture the conference room table again, this time all of your coworkers are sitting around the table. and they're all talking and they're all discussing the project or, you know, what they did last weekend. The door opens again, and this time you walk in. What happens to the mood of the room? Your brand makes that decision for you. And that's what people need to realize. Whether you know it or not, you have a brand that people associate with you. And if you know what it is, you can use it to your advantage. Or in some cases, you may have to change it because you may be giving off, say, a negative impression that you don't even know about, and you won't if you don't ask the right questions. And that's what the personal brand is. And that's a hard thing for a lot of people to do, is to understand their impact in any given situation and how they're perceived by others. And once you know that, you can really begin to use your brand to your advantage. But you can't if you don't know that basic thing first.
Yeah, that is such a good exercise. And when it comes to someone walking to a room, it's their assumed image. What are people expecting from you? And there's one little saying just to lead on from that, because this is such an interesting topic, Ryan. When you walk into a room, you're going to be communicating, and you communicate verbally or non-verbally. And the meaning of communication is the response that you get. And, you know, with this example of you saying, you know, the senior leader came in, all of his previous communications would elicit a certain response and a certain feeling, and whether people actually think, you know, here is a really open leader or someone who's a little bit more dictatorial in their approach. And mm-hmm. What a great example that is. I think I might lift that and use that with my clients, too, when they're concerned. Excellent, excellent advice, Ryan.
No, please do. And it plays perfectly into your book, and what you say are the different ways that you're perceived by others. And it includes things like your image and how you dress and how you talk. And, you know, all of that wrapped up is your personal brand.
And also that final one, which I love, the proven image over time. There can be a lot of rah, rah, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, and positive talk, but over time, if you don't keep your promises and you don't deliver, then that congruence just doesn't happen, and then
Correct.
Everything that you've built up just falls into a heap, because you've got to be consistent, you've got to be authentic, and people have got to know that if this is what they're used to expect, you need to turn up and deliver what they're expecting. Otherwise, there's so much confusion.
Absolutely. And the same is true whether you're offline or online. And it's probably even more true online, because, I mean, let's face it, we could create a completely fake perception of ourselves online until you meet me or you meet someone in person. And then it can completely kill the perception. So that's why, as a part of my DICE process, I always start with discover, which is discovering your personal brand, understanding who you are, how you add value, how people perceive you, because you don't want to go online and put out a different persona or a different perception. It has to be authentic to who you are.
Can you talk us through the entire DICE process?
Sure. So you just, I mean, that was D. D is discover, and it's really understanding your personal brand, how you add value to the world, and how others perceive you. It's a hard step. It's not easy. You have to ask yourself a lot of difficult questions, questions you may have never asked yourself before, but you need to do it. You have to understand. And then once you understand, you can begin to integrate, which is integrate your online and your offline lives together, because let's face it, we're in a digital age now. For many of us, maybe even all of us now, our first impressions will more often than not be made online, meaning before somebody meets you, they're going to Google your name. They're going to find out as much as they can about you, whether you're meeting at a coffee shop or you're getting ready to do a podcast interview. You're going to Google someone to find out about them. So you need to make sure that your brand aligns with what you're saying online, because if Jane, you and I've been talking now for a while, and we both looked each other up on Google before we got online. So we had certain expectations and had had those not been met during our discussion, we would have walked away from that discussion going, well, that person's got a completely fake online profile. That's not who they really are. And so that's why you start with Discover, so you can then integrate your real authentic self, if you will, into your online persona. And so during integration, we're creating website because, in my opinion, everybody needs to have their own personal website. And if nothing else, I would highly encourage all of your listeners to go and purchase their name as a domain. By their first and last name.com. And the reason for that, even if you don't want to have a website right now, go do that now. Go buy that domain now so you can secure it for yourself, because someone else out there with your name, if it's available, they could buy it and they could use it for reasons that you don't want them to. So I always recommend it. You know, it's a super inexpensive thing to do. Buy your name, first and last name.com. Just hold on to it if you don't want to start a website right away. I also recommend any parents listening, go buy your children's domain names. They will absolutely not thank you for it now. Don't give it to them as a birthday present, but someday down the road, they will want to have their names. They will want to have the first and last name.com, and you will save them a lot of frustration if you do that. And so integrate is really about setting up strategically your online profile so it aligns with who you are and you know, and what you do. And then that way, through discovering and integrating, you're getting to know not only yourself, but other people get to know you. Then once we have our website set up and we've chosen some social media accounts that we want to be present on, then we move to C, which is create. And so now we're going to create content. And we create the content so that people will eventually, they will consume it and they will make a decision. They either like you and what you have to say, or they don't. And so by that act, they kind of self-segregate themselves from you. And that's perfectly okay. So from discover to integrate, people are getting to know you. Now you're creating content. You're putting your thoughts out online for others to see and for others to hear. You're vetting your thoughts out online and in public. And you're doing that through three forms of content. You're doing it either written through a blog, or you're doing it through audio, which is a podcast, for example, or you could do video, either one of the three. And you can repurpose all of the content from, you know, it kind of goes up and down the pyramid. But everything starts with writing within the create step. And through your act of creation, you know, so I put out a podcast. People will listen. They will either like what I have to say or they won't. And if they don't, they won't listen again. If they do, then they will listen over and often. And so from discover to integrate, people now know you. Once you start creating content around a subject matter or your area of expertise, people will now start to like what you have to say. And once they start to like what you have to say, then you know that you've created some content. You can start to reach out to some people through the E step in DICE, which is engagement. And now that's when you're on Twitter and you're reaching out to people. You're networking, if you will, and you're doing it in a way that people want you to, because they know you, they like you, and now they're starting to trust you. And so engage is, to me, it's the critical step in the process, but it's also the one that you can't just jump into and do it without going through the first few steps before you get there. Because if you just start reaching out to people online, I mean, let's admit it, that's kind of weird, right? If you just blindly start reaching out to people you don't know and they don't know you, they're likely not going to respond, and you're not going to get a lot of success doing that. You might get a few people who respond to you, but ultimately, you're not going to achieve a goal, whatever that might be that you're trying to achieve, through jumping straight to engagement without understanding your brand, integrating your brand online, creating content that you want people to consume, and then ultimately engaging with them through.
DICE, what a great acronym. And I love the discover, integrate, create, and engagement methodology, because it works so well. As you were going through it, I was thinking, am I doing that? And I realized, yes, tick, tick, tick. So far, so good.
Yeah, absolutely. And another thing with create too, it's not necessarily you just creating content all the time. You can also curate other people's content. It's still creating content. You're just taking content that someone else has created and you're sharing it with a broader audience. If you go to my Twitter feed, for example, you'll see that I curate a lot of content in my Twitter feed, and I have very few tweets, if you will, that are just me either talking to someone or posting my own material. I really like to kind of be the resource that curates a bunch of different information for people to come and look at. And so that's not to say I don't create content. I have, you know, I blog twice a week now, and I have this podcast, so I'm creating a lot of content too. But through my social media outlets, I'm trying to curate other people's content for a couple of reasons. One, I want to share as much knowledge as I can with as many people as I can share it with. But two, I'm being strategic in whose information I share, because in some cases, for example, I want to try to get someone on my podcast. And the best way to get somebody on your podcast is to share their content and to let them know that you appreciate what they're putting out. And so you want to share it. And then people will reciprocate by saying, reaching back to me and saying, hey, thank you for doing that. I'd love to be a guest and help you out too.
And what a great example, because Ryan, we found each other on Twitter.
Uh-huh, exactly. Twitter is by far my tool of choice.
Yeah, I just find initially when I started using Twitter, I wasn't quite sure how well it would work, because LinkedIn is really my medium, being a careers professional. But now I've found that Twitter seems to be gaining more and more momentum. And while we're talking about that, your Twitter handle is at Ryan Roten. My Twitter mm-hmm. handle is Jane Career Coach. But, you know, I just want to go back to Dice again. Something interesting that happened to me 2 days ago was, someone approached me on LinkedIn and wanted to connect, and it was just a generic, you know, I'd like to add you to my LinkedIn connections. And so mm-hmm. I never accept those, because I think if you can't be bothered to write me a personal note, well, I can't be bothered to accept you. And so I wrote back, just replied without connecting, to say, you know, thank you so much for your request to connect. How may I help you? And then they sent me a message back, which was good. But the message was, I've just started this great new business and it's getting really good reviews. I would love it if you would share it. And I thought, oi, really?
Right.
Really? I mean, this great new, I don't know if it's a great new business or not. That means I now have to take the time to go and look at all the reviews to decide whether it's a great new business. And the business wasn't actually in my area of interest anyway. So I responded back and said, thank you so much for applying so promptly. However, when it comes to networking, it really is good to develop a relationship first of all, because I have no idea what your business is like. I haven't experienced it myself, and I can't recommend something that I don't have firsthand experience on. So yep. I would suggest that, you know, I'm very happy to keep in touch, but give me the customer or the user experience first, and then I can make a recommendation. So that's actually one way not to use reaching out for people, where the first right. contact is asking for something. There's
right.
no relationship.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that person violated the DICE formula.
Absolutely.
They went right to engage. They did not let you get to know them or like them before they decided to reach out. And that's why it doesn't work. You can't just, you know, if you just reach out to people, you're a salesperson, and you have to take time to try to figure out whether or not you even want to like what this person has to sell. And a lot of us, frankly, today don't have time to take the time to get to know people then that way. And you can't violate and jump straight to E and start engaging without building up, if you will. People have to know you, and they have to like you before they will start to trust you and engage.
Exactly. Know you, like you, trust you, 100%. I think the problem is that social media is so immediate that some people might get quite impatient and they want to see the results. But you've got to remember that really social media, it is relationship development. It's the same as building a friendship or a working relationship. It takes time. You need to warm yep. people up. People have got to really, as you say, get to know you and discover who you really are as an individual or as a brand. So, yeah, it all relates to personal branding. Now, Ryan, We have been talking for a long time. This is about double the length of my normal podcast.
Sorry.
But you know,
sorry about that.
Don't be sorry. You're so interesting. What I want to do is I want to have you back on the show and let's focus on personal branding, because I think that's something that listeners would be very, very interested in. And okay. I think between the two of us, we'd have plenty to chat about.
Okay, absolutely. I do want to touch on one thing, if I can, real quick.
Yes.
You mentioned somebody was getting in social media and they're not getting results fast enough. First of all, if they're on social media and they're thinking results, they've already failed.
Yeah.
Because social media is a conversation. It is not a conversion. If you want to convert people, you first have to converse with them. And social media should be used to converse with people. And so the result that you should look for in social media is to develop, is to get people to know you and to like you so that eventually they might trust you enough that you could get whatever the result is that you're looking for. But first you have to have a conversation.
Yes, I 100% agree. And, you know, in this world where everyone wants action and results so quickly, we do need to take a step back and really think about what is it that we're hoping to achieve and stay true to yourself.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Your authenticity. And Ryan, your authenticity comes through the passion for what you do. Your really interesting and varied career path from building goofy heads at Walt Disney all the way through to becoming, you know, this branding and careers specialist in your podcast is a brand new you is very, very exciting. And it's been my pleasure to speak with you. And just I just want to mention, you can find out more about Ryan at ryanroten.com. If you go to my website, janejacksoncoach.com, in the show notes, look for Ryan's podcast episode. All the information will be there, his Twitter handle, his websites, and a bit more information about Ryan too. Any final words?
I like to give people the same advice, I guess, every time I get on which is just get started doing something. If you think that there is a direction or a path that you want to go, don't think about it too long. Do something about it. We live in an age where knowledge is all around you in various forms. Turn on, if you're interested in basket weaving, don't just think about basket weaving. Go find a podcast about basket weaving and learn how to do it, because I promise you there probably is one out there. But if you want to change, you have to change, and therefore you need to start.
Wise words from Ryan Roten. Thank you so much, Ryan. Wonderful, wonderful talking to you always. And you will be back on the show very soon.
Thank you, Jane. I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. You can get a free audiobook download and free 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/Jane Jackson Careers. There are over 180,000 book titles to choose, so give it a go and get your free audiobook today from audibletrial.com/Jane Jackson Careers.
You've been listening to Jane Jackson Careers. Sign up to receive regular career advice at janejacksoncoach.com.
If you enjoyed this episode of Your Career Podcast, I invite you to check out my career success program at thecareersacademy.online. The Career Success Program is the original program that uniquely provides 24/7 on-demand career support and fortnightly live career coaching sessions to keep you on track to reach your career goals. It is the essential resource for anyone who wants to manage their career effectively, make a career change, and land the job they'll love. Whether you're in exploration mode, road or seeking a new career direction and need help to make it a reality, the Career Success Program is for you. Not only do you get access to my step-by-step roadmap to navigate your career crossroads, my extensive training library and exclusive members-only discounts and tools, you'll also become part of my supportive community of professionals who will help you with feedback, encouragement, and advice. All this and more makes the Career Success Program the number one place to be for anyone looking to start, manage, and grow their career. Check it out and join me at thecareersacademy.online.